Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and well, I don't know what happened to the Tigers either. They were my source of escape, my source of happiness during these dark times, and for the past spring and most of the summer, they were exactly that. But this last month, they've been anything but fun to watch or fun to listen to as they are recording one of the greatest collapses in baseball history. And for that, they'll forever be remembered, which is something, I suppose. Leftoflansing at gmail.com is the best way to reach me. Follow me on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, the Gram, and yes, on YouTube. There is a Left of Lansing page on the YouTube where you can check out not only the weekly episodes of Michigan's premier progressive podcast or the much anticipated and much celebrated Monday musings and Friday shorts, but you'll find the much coveted YouTube short videos that I film and produce myself, and it shows. So not only like and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, but also like and subscribe to Left of Lansing on the YouTube. Coming up here in a few, I'll be talking with Kelsey Hector, who's running to become Lansing's next mayor. Now, Kelsey is focusing on a progressive, community-driven kind of campaign, and Kelsey stunned the Lansing political world by finishing second place in the primary last August. So that means Kelsey will get to face incumbent Mayor Andy Schorr, who's receiving some big-time backing from some state Democratic Party officials like Governor Whitmer, but also from some powerful Lansing business groups. And it's not a secret that Kelsey is facing an uphill battle, but they're going to put the working class's interests first and foremost ahead of the donor class. So I'm looking forward to my discussion here with Lansing mayoral candidate Kelsey Hector in just a few moments. There's too much going on that I'm not really sure, you know, where to begin the last time that we talked, but I'd like to share with you a little conversation I had with a dear friend of mine the other day, because they said something that I've heard others say from time to time, especially over the last year. They told me that they are worn out and that they are exhausted by the constant barrage of news coverage of our dear leader. And for their mental health break, they need to enforce what you would call a personal news blackout. And look, I get it. I really do get it. I'm in the same boat, which is why I don't do a whole lot of commentating or even checking on the news via social media. I mean, I will peruse places to see if I'm missing some big news, but otherwise, I don't mind giving myself some mental health breaks on the weekends. Usually, I record the Friday shorts, and after that, I'm done talking politics until first thing Monday morning. And mental health breaks, they are good. I mean, for me, that could be through watching shows, or since it's football season, I'm escaping through that, or reading something non-political, or listening to non-political podcasts, or walking Trenny the dog, or listening to music while kicking back with a Michigan brew on the patio. And with the warm weather that we are having here this September, we can get outside even more, and I'm liking that. So I get it. I get that we all need mental health breaks. I met another dear friend for lunch the other day, and they expressed how it's great that I, Pat Johnston, am out there providing a much-needed progressive voice in Michigan, and that while they're very politically engaged, they too have been demoralized with everything that's happening. They even said that they'd like to do some charity work or do something where they feel like that they're actually doing some good. And I gave her a line from the TV show MASH, which I have shared on here a few times. I'm going to share it again, but it's where a villain in one episode deridingly asks Hawkeye and BJ if they're going to clean up all of Korea themselves. And BJ responds, no, just our little corner of it. That's the way to view things nowadays. I really do. I like that viewpoint. Please. I mean, there are all kinds of charities and nonprofits out there who need help. And if you want to see immediate change occur, that's where you can change it fast. I always say change happens fast on a local end more than on a state and national end. I believe in that because I believe it to be true. It's one thing to send out a tweet or make a video, but it's another to actually get outside and help people or help your community or help the environment or help your local school raise money for the marching band or the robotics team or the soccer club, whatever. My point is that there are a number of ways that you can help affect change where you live or find peace or just find a little bit of happiness and hope for humanity. You're allowed to do that. I read someone on social media post something, and I wish I could find it. It was from this week, and I didn't save it, but they commented on how they just don't recognize American culture anymore. And so because of that, they are happy to live in Greece, to be away from it all. Hey, whatever works best for you. I mean, whatever works best for your mental health, your personal, financial, and physical safety. I am not going to tell anyone how to live. I don't begrudge anyone for leaving America to live abroad. There's a lot of appeal in that. Although fascism appears to be slowly growing in strength in many parts of Europe nowadays. I mean, look at former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and how he learned the importance of controlling media and controlling the message in order to reign in that country for a number of years. I mean, you think dear leader Trump just figured this out all himself? You don't think that he looked at Berlusconi and say, hey, why not here in America? So moving away, I get it. It is an option. Finding your own inner peace is never a bad idea. And whichever way you find it, my advice to you is to search for it and to live it. For me, I told you what I do sometimes for mental health breaks, but I'm not giving up my freedom of speech to let authoritarianism and, yes, fascism run amok in my state of Michigan or in my country. I agree. It is demoralizing most of the time, all right? But that doesn't mean we completely check out and allow corporate authoritarians with the cult of MAGA white Christian nationalism to gain complete rule throughout the nation. And thankfully, there are many on the front lines giving voice to the voiceless and giving representation to those who can't afford it in our own corrupt system of government, which is under control of the Trump regime. Or look to Lansing, where corporate donors seem to be running the messages down there. So check out if you must from time to time, because it's good for everyone to do that. But don't remain completely checked out, since that's exactly what the authoritarians want you to do. They want you to get tired. They want you to tune out. And then they get to claim victory. And in the meantime, millions will continue to suffer. For example, and I know this may not seem like big potatoes to some, but I came across this story from Bridge Magazine's Maxwell Howard. And the article is titled, Congress Ends Nutrition Program UP Rep Called Results Disappointing. Now, Michigan used to receive around $27 million in federal funding to provide nutrition programs for Michiganders who desperately need it. And it's a program that's run through Michigan State University Extension. I mean, let me just read to you the beginning paragraphs from Maxwell Howard here in the story. Suzanne McAtee has attended the classes offered through Munson Hospital's Fruit and Vegetables Prescription Program since they began 5 years ago. By the way, the story is being written up in Traverse City. The story continues. At 93, she credits the program through which doctors prescribe diet education as a treatment for chronic diseases such as obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure with helping her manage her health. I have stage 5 kidney disease. My next step is dialysis, McAtee said. I have controlled this through my diet, which is very important to me, and that's the other reason I pay particular attention to everything I eat. Okay, that sounds like a decent way to spend our taxpayer money, doesn't it? I mean, it's just $27 million to the state. $27 million, when you look at it from the grand scheme of things, what we spend here in this country really isn't that much. I mean, no one wants to go through dialysis if they can avoid it. And this fruit and vegetable prescription program seems like it's not only a good way to keep people healthy, but it's also a cheaper and more efficient way for people to live, right? Seems like it to me. But not if you're in the MAGA Republican Party. These healthy diet programs are called SNAP Ed programs, SNAP being the National Food Assistance Program and Ed standing for education. MSU Extension and the Michigan Fitness Foundation run these SNAP Ed programs in community centers, schools, and food pantries across the state. And these programs and classes are free for Michiganders to attend because, again, they're working to keep people healthy. Yet MAGA Republicans don't believe programs like that taught enough Americans to pull themselves up from their own bootstraps. They must tear that money away. Amazing, because unlike MAGA Republicans and many members of Congress across the aisle, thousands and thousands of Michiganders don't have access to fly on corporate donor junkets or engage in some trading of stocks. Don't call that insider trading, of course. Don't say that. I mean, they aren't afforded the best of the best when it comes to healthcare coverage, unlike members in Congress. No, they rely on these programs to help them lead healthier lifestyles, which in turn not only helps them, but helps all of us in terms of healthcare costs. It's a no-brainer. But the Republican MAGA murder budget contained a few lines defunding these SNAP Ed programs. Now, you may be wondering, why do I call the so-called big, beautiful bill, the MAGA murder budget, especially in these tumultuous times, is because, well, I call it that since that's how I see it. What's so big and beautiful about gutting Medicaid, thousands of clean energy jobs, rural hospitals, just so Elon Musk, Betsy DeVos, and Dear Leader himself and corporations receive more tax cuts? What's all beautiful about that? It's a bill that is putting American lives in danger. Of course, that doesn't mean I'm advocating harm or physical threats to anybody out there. The only threats I make here is to defeat MAGA Republicans at the polls, and that is the Democratic way. That is the progressive way. The other way is the strongman authoritarian way, such as when Dear Leader's cult attacked the Capitol on January 6th. That's the opposite way. That's the violent way. This isn't just a policy debate where we're trying to figure out if we either pay to rebuild roadside curbs or cut down some shrubbery in a downtown park. We're talking about people's lives and well-being. Because here's what the MAGA murder budget will do when it comes to this SNAP Ed program in Michigan. And this, again, is according to Maxwell Howard, quote, Congress slashed funding for SNAP Ed in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act earlier last year. More than 120 MSU Extension health educators will lose their jobs across Michigan this month, and the Michigan Fitness Foundation is in the process of sunsetting some of its own programs into next year. How is not only gutting a program that helps keep Michiganders healthy, but also gutting more than 120 MSU Extension jobs an example of something that is quote-unquote beautiful? How is that winning, Michigan? How the hell is that making America healthy again? Oh, but thank God we're telling pregnant women to take the pain and stay away from Tylenol, despite any evidence out there showing that taking a few pills here and there causes autism in their children. I mean, it is amazing, amazing that millions of Americans are getting their healthcare advice from this guy.
Effective immediately, the FDA will be notifying physicians that the use of acetaminophen, is that okay? Yes. Which is basically commonly known as Tylenol.
God. Oh, man. We have a guy who could not say the word acetaminophen. His brain is turning to mush. But rest easy, America. Your government is here to protect you. By the way, according to that Bridge, Michigan story, MAGA Republican congressman from Louisiana. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being told he's from northern Michigan, which includes the entire UP, Jack Berbian. I'm sorry, but I hear he spends more time down in Louisiana than he does here. Anyway, Jack Bergman said in an email that while he was sad to see SNAP Ed defunded, it produced disappointing results. Oh, yes. And as Sarah Eichberger, a Traverse City SNAP Ed educator, said in response to Jack Bergman, she said, how can you now say one underfunded federal nutrition program is responsible for not making our entire country healthy? We live in a country where there are systems and structures that prevent people from being healthy. Yes, yes, we do. That is true, Jack Bergman from Louisiana. It was underfunded to begin with, and now you're saying, oh, look at these results. No, it just shows how obesity and diabetes continue to destroy lives in this country, you jerk off. We should be doing more to promote and to provide healthier foods for people across Michigan, both in urban areas and in rural areas, because we are all part of the same faction. We are all working class Michiganders. Jack Bergman, though, doesn't care about working class Michiganders. He just cares about the elite donor class. I mean, this is just like keeping a stupid coal-fired power plant open on the west side of Michigan, even though the company owning it, Consumers Energy, which isn't exactly the most leftist of companies, scheduled to shut it down back in May, but the Trump regime is forcing it open despite it being out of date, too expensive, and too damaging to Michigan's air, just because the oil and gas lobby paid Dear Leader to be in the White House. They don't care about the health of working class Michiganders. They only care about profits and power. Which brings me to this final point. Before inviting Kelsey Hector to the show, former vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris. Now, she's back in the public eye after releasing a new book on her presidential campaign called 107 Days. The title is about, of course, the number of days she took over for Joe Biden as the head of the Democratic Party last year. And I haven't gotten a chance to read the book, although watching MSNBC's Rachel Maddow's interview of Harris on YouTube, it's interesting that Maddow highlighted a part in the book where Harris described how some Democrats weren't the most enthused once President Biden announced that he was stepping aside for Harris. And that included Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who told Harris, "I believe you'll win, but I need to let the dust settle, talk to my colleagues before I make a public statement." Sounded like someone was a bit disappointed by the process. And I get it. I seem to recall someone clamoring for a convention primary race. Who was that? Oh, yeah, that's right. That was me. Regardless, I thought out of the gate, Kamala Harris did a great job as she focused on corporate price gouging, affordable housing, corruption, and more. But as I said ad nauseum after the election, this decision to go to the mythical center was a disaster because it appeared that she didn't stand for really much of anything. And she was pretty much telling everyone, hey, we're just going to stick with the status quo. That's not what a lot of Americans wanted to hear. And even those who were voting for her, they didn't want to hear that. And those Democratic consultants who gave her such advice helped cause the times that we are now in. Of course, we cannot overlook or discount or diminish how racism and sexism played a role since this country ended up voting for a guy who tried to steal the 2020 election, who was an adjudicated sexual abuser, and who's a 34-time felon. They voted for that guy over an accomplished black woman, a guy who cannot speak in complete sentences or say the word acetaminophen, and also a guy who thinks immigrants seeking asylum come from literal insane asylums. That all being said, Harris had the reins of her campaign and agreed to go the non-working class, non-populist route, and she lost. But at the very beginning of her interview with Rachel Maddow, Harris talked about how surprised she's been over how corporate America and the billionaire class capitulated to Dear Leader since the start. She said, "I always believed that if push came to shove, those titans of industry would be guardrails for our democracy." You know, this is where I believe that people like Kamala Harris and many establishment corporate Democrats failed all of us. If you recall, during the Democratic Party convention last summer, or in the summer of 2024, UAW President Sean Fain gave a fiery speech, as did Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Those speeches happened on the same night, and it was nice hearing a real working-class agenda being shared on the DNC stage. However, later that night, former American Express CEO Kenneth Chenault appeared at the podium to announce his support for Harris. He led American Express for nearly two decades, and it was being reported that he was going to be one of the frontrunners to become Treasury Secretary had Harris won. But other than that, what purpose was his speech? Was it reaching out to the working class who were struggling day by day? No, it was to appease the rich corporate elitist donor class. It sent mixed messages that confused voters that night. Well, that and also not inviting Palestinian Americans on stage to describe the horrors their family members were experiencing in Gaza. Yeah, that sent a mixed message as well. But these titans of industry were never going to save America. In authoritarian governments, capitulation is needed in order for specific corporations to win favor over other ones. And corporate titans understand that pleasing Dear Leader guarantees them favor and goodwill and tax breaks. and the gutting of the National Labor Relations Board, and less environmental protection, and a more corrupt and corporate-friendly Supreme Court. It's why the crypto bros are thrilled to have Dear Leader leading the way. You see, they make more money for him, and then he cuts consumer protections for the rest of us when it comes to crypto. And it makes you wonder why Michigan Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin voted to further eliminate cryptocurrency protections. The tech bros and corporate titans across a number of industries understand that capitulation means more power, and they're fine with that. They are more than fine with that, which is why we progressives were begging Harris and are still begging many Democrats to go more working class, to go more populist. Yet, they don't seem to get that message as we watched Kamala Harris in that very same interview give a tepid endorsement towards Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani, who will be New York City's next mayor in just over a month. Establishment Democrats are not going to save you. The courts are not going to save you. Corporations were never going to save you. It's up to the people to save the working class, and it's up to the people to save democracy. One of those people fighting to save the working class is Kelsey Hector, who's running to become Lansing's next mayor. She's up next right after this brief timeout. You're listening to LOL.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here. And we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
Follow Left of Lansing again on Blue Sky, Facebook, the Gram, and yes, even on Twitter. Look, I understand. I know there's lots of debate going back and forth amongst progressives as to whether or not to stay on Elon's Twitter, and I get the arguments for leaving altogether. I'm still going to be on there because I have to see what MAGA Republicans are saying and doing. And while I know my stuff doesn't carry much weight on that hell site's algorithms, I'm still going to post thoughts on there, and I'm still going to push back against MAGA when I feel like it's needed. Okay, so you can still follow me on Twitter. Also, remember to subscribe and give the show a good 5-star review wherever you're listening. Subscriptions and 5-star reviews really help us in podcast land, okay? All right, well, I have to thank a YouTube viewer on one of my videos on my YouTube page of alerting me last month on a major victory for progressives in Michigan. And that's when Kelsey Hector surprised some so-called veteran political observers down there in Lansing by securing a spot on the November ballot for the mayoral race in Lansing. Incumbent Democratic Party Mayor Andy Shore collected the majority of the vote, but Kelsey Hector was able to finish in second place, defeating some other candidates who had name recognition on their side. But one of the primary opponents that Kelsey defeated, David Ellis, endorsed Kelsey Hector, telling the City Pulse that Kelsey knows what they're talking about and that Kelsey does not ignore people that they disagree with. Now, Kelsey will have a one-on-one face-off against Mayor Shore, who's got the backing of some prominent Democrats, including Governor Whitmer, and who's also got the backing of the powerful Lansing Regional Chamber Political Action Committee. But Kelsey Hector doesn't seem deterred by that, and even without big donor money, Kelsey's message and campaign is resonating with a good chunk of Lansing voters. And with that, I'd like to welcome Kelsey Hector to Left of Lansing here this week. Thanks so much for joining us here, Kelsey.
Thank you so much, Pat. I'm really excited to be here and talk a little bit more about our campaign and my love for Lansing. So I appreciate you having me on.
You're 33, correct?
I am, yes. I'll be 34 in October. It's coming up pretty quick.
When you were 23 years old, did you envision running to become Lansing's next mayor, you know, a decade later?
Absolutely not. If you would have told me that I would be right in this position I am now, I would have probably thought you were lying.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, where did you grow up and, you know, where did you go to school?
Yeah, so I grew up in rural Eaton County. I went to Eaton Rapids most part. I actually dropped out and went and got my GED and ended up going back to college eventually. And I have lived off and on in Lansing a big chunk of my life. And it's definitely the place that I've always called home and the place I always come back to because there's just something really special about Lansing and the people that live here. So,
well, this is something I usually ask many candidates who appear on the show. So I'd just like to ask you, I mean, looking back, was there something that happened, be it locally or was it something in national politics, whatever, that made you politically active in the first place?
Yeah, I think that growing up in poverty, you start to realize very quickly that those that take care of us are actually our neighbors and not the system. Even though we pay taxes and we show up every day and, we're the people on the ground building the infrastructure and, all the systems that are in place. And you just start noticing how systemic inequities happen and the trickle down and all the hard things that our neighbors and ourselves go through. And I think that at some point, my anger kind of turned into more of like a sacred rage, right? This power behind movement and action, where you start to kind of channel your anger into what can be done in this moment and how can I lend a hand. And so I just slowly started doing that. It started with, mutual aid networks, helping out locally, being a little bit loud. And I was a teacher for a time and making sure that my kids' voices were advocated for and they got to sit at the table and advocate for themselves. And, as we go along, we continue to see the system fail people, right? We are not people-centered. Our solutions are largely based in capital and not people. And so I think at this point, I needed to see a shift. And if I didn't at least put my toe in the water to see what could happen, I would have regretted it. So that's why I'm here now.
You mentioned, growing up in poverty. So that is like one of the main reasons why you have decided to always help, not just with your community, but also get involved with politics because you got to see firsthand how those in poverty or just even, I mean, poverty, working class, it's all together. Do you see that the working class not represented enough or as effectively as they should be?
No, I don't. I don't see it in either party, right? So you have a huge issue with either being talked down to or Republicans trying to get people on their team and try to appease to sentiments that they think people are for. And at the end of the day, when I talk to folks, we all have the kind of same base understanding and values, but we have a lot of propaganda that gets pushed out and a lot of language that's used to mobilize people that isn't even in their best interest. And I think that people are just unruly. They want to see change and they want to see a government that actually works for them and people that are willing to walk the walk after they make promises or show up, right? And not just disappear after they're elected. I think building relationships should be the cornerstone of any job that you have, especially when it's a service leader. And I think that some of our politicians need to remember that they are a service leader. They aren't meant to govern, they're meant to be of service to the people. And so sometimes I think that we need to take a step back and remind them that that is actually what their job is.
Kelsey, I think we're getting a pretty good idea of what your politics probably are, considering all of the work that you've been doing for those in poverty and those in the working class. But I'm still going to ask you, what exactly are your politics?
I'm definitely a progressive, right? I would not consider myself a Democrat by any means. I see the issues with the Democratic Party, and I think that as long as I continue to be community first and justice oriented and centered, that's where my politics lead me. And I believe, like I said before, that government really should be a partner to the community, not a barrier. And when it comes to things like equity and inclusion and even just practical solutions, we really need to make sure that everyone's voices can be heard and we're making sure that, our table's big enough for everyone, but everyone can thrive because not one thing works for everybody. And so meeting people where they're at is what I'm all about.
That's awesome. You're the executive director for a nonprofit group called Punks with Lunch Lansing. Can you tell everybody what that's all about?
Yeah, so we do harm reduction stuff. We go out in the community and we provide safe use materials for people that are in active substance use. And we provide testing. Our team is in the near end of getting ready to do HIV, Hep C, and STI testing for folks. We go out and we connect people with other resources, right? So if you want housing, we try to connect you with, the ACEs in their places, the people that can help you with food. We go out with tents, we go out with hygiene supplies. We have a massive volunteer pool of people in our community that are just looking out for everyone. And that includes unhoused folks. We have volunteers that are unhoused or maybe used to be unhoused because I think we all kind of understand that if the system isn't going to take care of us, the only people left are us. And so we kind of try and fill those gaps where they're needed. And I think the work speaks for itself.
That sounds like it's an around the clock kind of a job and kind of a responsibility.
It is. Yes, it very much is.
But
And
something you
it's
love doing, right?
it definitely is. I mean, it's a little bit hard mentally when you have, you see the same thing over and over and over again. For example, we see these camps getting swept all around town, but people ain't have no place to go. And so they end up going back to the same place and getting swept again. And during that whole process, they lose documents, they lose belonging, they gain more trauma, right? People are already traumatized that are unhoused, and we continue to pile it on top of them without providing actual solutions and assistance to help people get to where they need to be. And I get that resources are thin, especially right now as we see all more cuts happening, but there's got to be some different way that we can do it, because the way we've been doing it just doesn't work.
As you just described, you're doing so much work for many unhoused residents in and around the Lansing area. Kelsey, what kinds of ideas or solutions do you think should be pursued to make housing more affordable?
I think the really practical thing is that we can take direction from places like the rent is too damn high and put in the tenant bill of rights. We can have more landlord accountability. We can make sure that people have the ability to fix their homes and put that towards rent if necessary, so that we don't look down the line and their home is getting red tagged and they got to be pushed out, right? I think that we can see a few things, right? We can stop doing sweeps the way that we're doing and instead go out and provide people with resources. We can make sure that when we're having people and developers come into our community, that we have community-centered solutions and those community agreements where we're making them kind of help out, right? Like we're going to put some money towards some affordable housing, or we're going to make sure that the local residents are the ones that are going to have a good union job to come to when their doors open. There's a lot of really practical small things that I think that we could be doing that don't cost us a lot of money, and we're just not doing them. And my question is why?
Kelsey, what drew you in to really want to get into this whole fight for Lansing's mayoral race? I mean, what made you want to run here for mayor this year?
So I've never ran for anything before, but I kept waiting for someone to step forward during this election that would have maybe a little bit more political or community backing than I did, just coming out of left field and nowhere. And I just kept waiting, and no one ever really stepped forward. I know that we had some other people that, are great, but I would have loved to see some other folks put their name in the running. And the day of came, and I had talked to a few other folks that I know, and it's like, what happens if we just do it at the base level? Least we can be loud and maybe have force Andy to make some more, deliberate choices to be involved and to help people out. So we did it. And then we were out there doing, talking to people and trying our best to campaign, even from sometimes a place of ignorance, just not knowing what we don't know. And then the election happened, and I think, we're very excited and in awe, shocked at the same time. And so that just means more work to be done.
Were you surprised when you came in second
Yes.
place?
Yes, I was. Other people were like, I wasn't surprised. And I was surprised. We had Brown on the ballot that on city council, much larger name recognition than I. And so I was a little shocked. I had assumed that Brown was going to come in second. It was a very pleasant surprise. And I think that it kind of goes to show that us activists out here that are on boots on the ground, we're in a lot of different spaces. And sometimes we don't realize how many people we actually know across the city. So I've been very blessed and privileged to be able to occupy this space and meet people and learn everything I have learned so far and probably will continue to learn.
And you were talking about Lansing City Council member Jeffrey Brown, is that correct?
Yes.
Wanted to make sure on that one. Where do you believe that Andy Shore, the current mayor, where do you think that he has really fallen short here on helping the working class in Lansing?
I think that he just needs to be more connected to the people. I think that he needs to understand that there's already solutions in every corridor of Lansing, and our neighbors know what we need. We just need a platform and someone to advocate for us. And we need someone that's connected, right? We need someone that is willing to build those relationships and not just show up for photo ops. And I think that he, there's some things that he is doing well. I'm not gonna take that away from him. I think that he's a pretty nice guy, but we need someone that's willing to take risks, someone that's a little bit loud. Someone that's willing to not only do the right things locally, but to be loud and advocate for us on a state and federal level. And we just need that push. And I think that when you get someone a little bit younger and a little bit more community centered and connected, you see a lot of mountains start to move.
On your website, you said that you'd like to support small businesses and the working class in Lansing. How would you like to help out the working class in Lansing? And where do you think that the current leadership has fallen short in that regard?
Yeah, so I can just tell you what my neighbors have told me, and they've noticed that a lot of long-term businesses have been closing their doors. They've noticed that there's not as much support outside of the downtown corridor than there is downtown for businesses. They've noticed, you know, some things that just make it hard when we have new businesses coming in, or we're trying to market to outside businesses to come in, where we just need to make sure that we're giving a lot more love to what's already here, right? How can we prop up what already exists to create economic opportunity so that the money stays here? And I think just listening to our neighbors and really taking to heart what they're telling us is the way to go. And I don't know if that's really happening in this moment. And I know that we do try with different town halls and stuff, but oftentimes a town hall happens and then the very things that are being said in those town halls don't end up making the cut. And so my question is are we just making space for people's voices? Are we actually making space to utilize their voices in rooms that they can't be in, right? To actually make the changes necessary. I would love to see more jobs come into Lansing, but I also want to be very careful about making sure that we have good paying jobs. We don't need more $12, $13, $14 an hour jobs. People can't live off that. We have a housing shortage. And if we don't have economic opportunity that allows people to work for a living wage, then we're just going to continue to see this cycle. And so I hope that even if whoever wins, that Lansing residents' voices are leveraged far more than they are right now.
Kelsey, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back and talk about your work with the unhoused community, because the Lansing City Council filed a lawsuit recently to clear an encampment in Lansing. That led to a battle with many fighting for the rights of the unhoused. Last week, Ingham County Judge Rosemarie Aquilina ordered that encampment to be shut down after she toured the site. I was hoping you could share more about what's happening on that issue and also about your fight for those in the encampment.
Yeah, absolutely. So Judge Aquilina mandated to the city of Lansing that they have to find adequate and appropriate housing for the residents that are at Dietrich Park. And so she had made it very clear today. We actually go back every Wednesday. So this would be the third time that we've been in court to make sure that the city is providing resources to those folks. And today she said she's willing to keep this case open for a year if that's how long it takes to get people in suitable housing. What we're seeing, though, is this rhetoric from the city saying that the people at the encampment actually don't want help. They don't want help, that there's all these issues and things. And what's really frustrating is with someone who is there all the time and know a lot of the residents there, that's just not true. And so I think that we, one, need to really stop with the rhetoric that we're pushing out, because it's not helpful to actually anyone. And I do amend the city to bring in all the organizations, but we also can't use the organizations as cover for, look at us, we're doing such a great job, right? So we need to be in partnership, in a working collaborative relationship with the city in order to move this along. And as far as from my organization standpoint, that kind of hasn't been happening until I met with some people today, where I finally think I opened the door to more conversation and collaboration on that point. What I'm worried about, though, is that we do have some shelters, and there are some shelters that may have open beds, but they're not always friendly to LGBTQ folks, people with disabilities who may need a caretaker. And so I think that this complex issue needs to be looked at in totality. And I think that Judge Aquilina is in a good place to do that. I just hope she continues to lighten the fire under the city to make sure that she's not taking what they say at face value and looking at all of the facts and listening to more people than just what the city is saying. Half the camp did get swept last week before court. One of the business owners had cut a deal with the city to come in and bulldoze all of the land, meaning all of the old, the trees that were there, the growth. It's right off the Grand River. And so I used to be a science teacher. Ecology is my thing. That's concerning, because now all of a sudden we're going to see an increase in erosion and different things trickling down to the Grand River, which is frustrating. They destroyed people's homes that day. And this was all right before court, and the city knew about it because they made a deal with the business owners. They didn't warn anybody. They didn't give us adequate time to move people out of there. We had probably about 15 to 20 advocates and community members that showed up. They came to move people's stuff out of there. I was there. If you would like to see some videos of it on my Facebook, I feel free to go check it out. It was a very, very hard day. And if we let the city kind of get away with saying that no one wants help, that's what's going to happen to the other half of that camp. And, you know, people deserve better.
No, they do deserve better. And this is the maddening part about all this. When I look at it on a political level here, I keep hearing some Republicans, both here in the state. Well, let's actually just pay attention to here in the state, where they're saying, hey, it's because of the Gretchen Whitmer administration, right? It's because of Democrats being in control of Lansing for those 2 years that the economy isn't working for working class people, that the working class people are suffering because of all of these Democratic policies. It's horrible what Michiganders have to fight through each and every day because of the so-called failed economic policies from Democrats. Yet these same Republicans who at one moment say that the economy is rough for everyone will then turn around once they get into power and they will blame people. They will blame the working class for not being able to find adequate housing. And here's the thing. The economy is rough for millions of Michiganders and millions of Americans nationwide. And that's the frustrating part, is that they use the struggles of the working class to get into power, but then they immediately flip and blame the same working class for not being able to pay the rent.
Yeah.
Or to buy a house or whatever. Their answer to those people is, oh, wait, you're just lazy. You're just lazy. And to some, they even say, hey, maybe if you're on Fox News, you say, hey, maybe we should just involuntarily lethally inject them because they're homeless. Yeah. Can you talk about that kind of frustration and how our society tends to dehumanize people who are unhoused?
I think that, you know, capitalism demands a boogeyman. And so if you want to continue to go and do the what we consider the right thing, that we need to make sure we have this fear for you. And that tends to be unhoused folks, right? You could be them. This could be you. And in reality, what we need to be thinking is that there's so many systemic failures that people are pushed into these positions, right? The pressure and the weight of our society right now create these problems. It is a symptom of the larger whole. It's frustrating as someone who is out there talking to folks. Like I've couch surfed before. I've lived out of my car before, and I get it. And it's hard and it's not easy. And you're right. A lot of these folks do have jobs, and it's just frustrating because it doesn't just come from the Republican side. That may be really drastic, but we also have Democrats that are sweeping camps. We have, you know, not enough resources going to where they should be going. And so the whole system as a whole is very, very frustrating. I mean, not just to me, but to a lot of people right now. And we got to do better. We got to stop putting capital before people, and we have to start having people-centered responses and solutions to things. And we're all interconnected. And I wish more people would understand that.
Agreed. Progressive candidate to become Lansing's next mayor, Kelsey Hector, who is also the executive director of Punks with Lunch Lansing. Kelsey, if anybody would like to learn more about your campaign and like to help out your campaign here, how can they do so?
So check us out on our website, kelseyhector.com. That's KelseyHector. You can reach out to us on social media, or if you see me around town, I don't bite, just stop and say hi.
Well, listen, thank you so much for being on this week. You're definitely the real deal, and it's inspiring to have a strong progressive, not just a candidate, but a strong progressive advocate on behalf of many of those who need people like you fighting for them. So thanks so much for being on, and good luck to you, Kelsey.
Thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate the time.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audio Boom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Special thanks to Kelsey Hector for joining the show. I will provide links to her campaign site and also her campaign's Facebook page as well. Remember at the beginning of the show when I was talking about affecting change on the local level and how that might be the best way to fight back against the creeping authoritarianism that we're witnessing throughout the country? Yeah, that's the front lines, your local community. That's the front lines. And also, it actually is a way to help people in your community and to help you feel like that you are making a positive impact for many. It takes more than just tweeting or posting hot takes on the gram. Believe me, I should know since I do my share of that. But there's Kelsey Hector spending time on finding ways to make the system work for those who are feeling left behind by the system. And there's Kelsey Hector using their experiences of growing up in poverty to find ways to help people gain a better life. And there's Kelsey Hector doing the work for the common good and also putting her name on the ballot to represent the working class in Lansing. Yes, 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 it is probably going to be an uphill battle for Kelsey, but putting a face to the struggling working class is part of the battle. And in that way already, Kelsey is winning. Check out her website and donate to help her out if you can. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Well, as of this recording, there was another shooting because this is America. This shooting occurred in Dallas, Texas, where a white male shot an ICE facility, killing one detainee or one undocumented person. Were they undocumented? We don't know yet. While critically wounding two other detainees before shooting himself dead. No ICE officials were injured in the shooting. Now, Vice President for the Tech Bros, J.D. Vance, and Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem spent the day decrying the violence, which they declared to be left-wing. Now, FBI Chief Kash Patel, and I still cannot believe that's a true title for such a clown, shared a photo which he claimed showed that the shooter had ideological motives. And that photo appears to say anti-ICE on one of the gunmen's shell casing. But knowing how much Kash Patel has lied about everything, including how he'd release everything regarding the dead sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, well, forgive me if I'll need more time and more evidence. Regardless, if this guy was anti-ICE, which is also a term not many use, how does killing a detainee help the cause again? That one doesn't make sense, and that's why I'm withholding any judgment for now. But make no mistake, the Trump regime and MAGA Republicans are using this very incident to get us to shut up and stop criticizing the lawlessness and the violent behavior that ICE is committing on thousands of good people living their lives in American communities. Now, what MAGA Republicans won't politicize is the gun, or how guns make it easy to kill people, or how guns seem to be in the hands of a lot of bad guys right now, despite law enforcement being around at many of these incidents. I mean, just last week, a suspected domestic abuser went over to his girlfriend's home to probably kill her because he shot and killed their dog. And once police arrived, the man shot three police officers dead in that southern Pennsylvania town of North Corridus, and the man reportedly used an AR-15 to kill the officers before police shot and killed the killer. Now, progressives and Democrats have been trying to make it harder for dangerous men like domestic abusers to get their hands on assault rifles, and we're not only doing it to help save the lives of women and female victims, we're also doing that to help save the lives of police officers. And that's why it's strange, really strange, that you haven't heard Dear Leader or J.D. Vance or Kash Patel or other MAGA Republicans say a whole lot about this event. Killing police officers is considered one of the worst crimes anyone could commit. And we're told by the gun nuts that people are less likely to use guns when authorities are on the scene. But that wasn't the case here. Once again, progressives are trying to make it more difficult for bad guys to get guns, while MAGA Republicans are making it easier. And can you imagine, just imagine, the uproar had the shooter been black or an immigrant or a transgender person? Can you imagine how the MAGA cult and the MAGA media machine would have played it? Can you? But since the guy was a domestic abuser and a white domestic abuser, they are all silent. And MAGA's silence on the shooting speaks volumes. At least to me it does.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Lansing mayoral candidate Kelsey Hector for being on the show. Hey, MAGA Republicans held a little vacation up on Mackinac Island over the weekend. Sure, I mean, there's this little budget issue they could have been negotiating with Democrats since, you know, a partial government shutdown in Michigan is looming in just a week. But come on, MAGA Republicans had to wine and dine with the best lobbyists out there. They didn't have time for the working class. Pish posh. Anyway, while on that little vacation getaway, MAGA Michigan Republicans held a little straw poll on who will be the Republican nominee for governor next year, and the winner was, according to Michigan Advance, Michigan Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt of Porter Township, as he got around 29% of the votes cast. Oh, great. Former Michigan Speaker of the House Tom Leonard came in second with 23.5%. Former Attorney General Mike Cox finished with 18.5%. And Congressman John James finished in fourth place with just 14% of the votes cast. Ouch! I mean, wait a second. Congressman John James, who always has believed that he's been the front runner, finished in fourth place? Oh, man. And what I would give to have that nut job Eric Nesbitt be the nominee. That would be beautiful. But what this straw poll, in all seriousness, does show is how these primary races for governor and for the open U.S. Senate seat will be a long fight on both sides of the aisle. And I think for the Democratic Party, there's going to be like a Tea Party kind of revolution happening there because the people are angry and they want to evaluate and measure up who's actually going to be working for them. Have a good weekend, everyone. And remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
I said, well, let's see how we say that. Acetaminophen. Acetaminophen. Is that okay?
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.